You talk about Leon as if you knew him forever. How did you get introduced to him in the first place?
It seems like forever, John, but when Shelter was going strong...
His record.
The record company.
Yeah.
With Denny Cordell, the guy from England, they had a partnership in Shelter Records. The Church Studio was the Shelter home base studio. Shelter Studio, more than Leon's personal studio. He had his personal studio at his house off of Peoria, and he had a personal studio up at the lake. Not that he didn't record at the church, but it was the label studio. The office was there to the south of the building, and a friend of Denny's, Simon Miller Monday, ran the office. Based on the tapes that I made, which were not very good, I don't think, from Stillwater, from my first studio, which had closed. Charlene and I moved to Nashville, back to Oklahoma. Based on those tapes, Simon Miller Monday let me record at the church studio, thinking I might get signed. So I started recording there and did that for a while until, condensing things, Leon and Denny had a falling out and ended Shelter as it was at the time. Denny took Shelter and he took all the equipment and went to California. Last thing he did was record Tom Petty and Mud Crutch, but that was after it was shut down. I was working there a Friday night recording. The next time I came back to record my own tunes, whether that was Monday, in my mind it was, the locks had been changed and it was over and the office and the house had been shut down. You know, essentially, Tom Petty and those guys, Mud Crutch was the name of their band at the time, recorded for a while in a church, and then they packed up all the gear, because Denny owned it now, and moved it to California. That was the end of the church studio in the Leon Russell period. But up until then, I'd been recording. How do we get to Leon? You know, I just loved Leon, the whole thing. That's before we moved. We moved back to Oklahoma, and I need a gig. So I call Rick Spears, who was the engineer for me at Shelter and my demos, and he says, well, we need a monitor mixer, stage mixer. I'm doing front of house, and we need a monitor mixer. And I got that gig, and that's when I first met Leon and actually went out on tour, and there's stories. But Leon was, you know, oaky, not frivolous, and he's throwing around money. So here are the roadies, some of which were best friends, went out and went all over the country and did those tours.
This had to be a special deal for you to actually...
It was an odd bizarre thing.
And then be with him.
Yeah. So here we are, and I can't, without visuals, go into my favorite story, but we're playing one of those venues that's big enough where the buses are parked in the venue behind the stage. You know, you can't see them, but down in there. It's after the show, and we're packing up. The roadies are working, packing up the stuff. And I look down from the stage, and I see Leon and Entourage walking towards the bus. He looks up at me, and he says, you'll get it right someday, Mickey Monitor. So he didn't know me yet. There's some pretty good stories in there. Not wild stories, just good stories of me being the stage mixer. It's a thankless job. It's a horrible job. I'm glad I don't have to do it.
The stage mixer. Tell us what that means.
Stage mixer, or the monitor mixer, hence the name Mickey Monitor. You're on stage and you're feeding everybody playing, and it was a big band, two drummers and three singers, and Leon had married Mary McCrary. So it's Leon and Mary, and then a couple guitar players and the bass player, and then Ambrose Campbell from Nigeria playing percussion. I'm sitting stage right, off to the right of the band, behind the girls, looking out across them, and the monitor mixer or stage mixer's job is to provide individual mixes for those people, each guy, including Leon, and you're mixing the sound for that. You know, how much drums do you want in your monitor and all that stuff? You can't hear it, though. So it's just a horrible thing because you're making mixes that you can't hear. It's not like in a studio where you're listening to the speakers and a little more bass, you know. You're just theorizing that the bass player might need a little more bass in his monitors. And then they look at you, and you see guys even now looking over across the stage and giving a thumbs up or down and pointing to the mic, meaning turn my vocal up or down. So it's a thankless job. We're at sort of the final gig, and some part of me is just wanting to go home. Some part of me is great to be working finally with a hero of mine. And coupled with that is distraught. You know, the only thing he's called me is Mickey Monitor. So one of the production guys, lighting guys, Fred Wood, he don't care. He's got no star struck nothing, you know. bless him. That's great. I'm plagued with that. He says, I'll take care of that. And Leon's walking by. He says, Leon, Steve Ripley here would like to officially meet you. And then my dear friend, still Bob Burwell, who's the guy who got me into the Jim Halsey Company, you can see him in the picture. Fred takes the picture, I think. It's a picture of me officially meeting Leon, shaking his hand. You can see I'm rolling my eyes, all caught up in the humor of it. Well, bless your heart, I'm sure he's saying. So my first real meeting of Leon, because it's after 4 weeks of working for him, is captured with a little picture that we still have.
A little bit about him, the special person that he was. He obviously had soul, phrasing, arranging, all that, that you so admired. Also talk about his greatest work.
Well, his greatest work would be hard to pin down, I'd think, but he was all of those things. And I went to work for him, and just to use his words, again, bless his heart, I essentially, effectively stocked him. You know, I wanted to carry this forward. I wanted to be his real engineer in the studio and thought we'd make history together and all this stuff. And his gifts are hard to pin down. For everybody, all of their influences come out. But he had a gift that is one of those crack in the cosmos things you can't quantify. We have tapes here that I've found of his brother talking about Leon sitting on the piano bench with their dad when Leon was two or three playing. Leon played the left hand, his dad played the right hand. So gifted from the beginning, taking classical music lessons and just getting it all from the beginning. It's a common story, more common than you think. Eddie Van Halen, a close friend of mine, has the same story of he really didn't learn music, quote unquote, because he could hear it all and play it all the first time he heard it on piano or anything. So, you know, he fooled him. Eddie did, and Leon would have been the same way. Won piano contests, and he never learned to read anything. He just played it.
All by ear.
All by ear, just absorbed it, and out it came. So his greatest gift, Leon, is that thing that is the thing that can't be quantified or whatever.
Excuse me, did he ever read notes?
Leon?
Yeah.
Oh, I think so, but not enough to get him in trouble.
So it was mostly?
Yeah, Glenn Campbell, they were all in the Wrecking Crew. Glenn kind of got him going in that, and James Burton, that guitar player. So Leon's playing these sessions. I didn't know Glenn Campbell, but I love the story of they're playing Beach Boys or Frank Sinatra records or whatever, and Leon early on says, gosh, I don't know what to play. Glenn wouldn't be a reader either, and Glenn just said, play that stuff you played growing up. Never heard anything like it. So that was kind of the heart of what he did. To say he couldn't really actually write cheap music and read it, I'd be overstating. I don't know. I never saw him do that. But he would do that more than I did. He did take lessons for a long time.